Good morning, good morning. My name is Andrea Simintov, and you're listening to Pull Up a Chair on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Oh, if only we could say, let's talk about the weather, let's talk about fun, let's talk about Madonna, let's talk about all the narishkeit, the silliness, the banalities and the trivialities upon which this sometimes vapid world spins. What would be luxuries to those of us living in Israel who, despite shopping, walking, visiting, cooking, schmoozing, educating, birthing, wiving, and husbanding, our reality is covered with a pall. A pall, a weightiness, a weight of a morality that exists in a vacuum of the human experience. And yet we try to remain upbeat on this show. Mi kamocha, who is like you? Children of Israel, we who have endured the weight of the world's loathing for thousands of years, and do we despair? We discussed that last week. Not a Jewish trait. Do we pack it all in and disappear into the galut? Into Olam HaGoyim, the world of the others? Some do. But many, many don't. Instead, we build, we create, we invent, we soar, we give, 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 as though we're adored. Mi kamocha. We are not human, we are suprahuman. Indeed, heroes in capes are the fantasies of cartoonists. Heroes in IDF tanks. Heroes walking around our hospitals and healing and offering succor. These are what heroes are. It is a blessing, an honor, an amazing life event to have chosen to live in the land of the Jews, the only country we have. Let's see, we have some things to cover today. Everything's emotional, everything's enormous. We're getting on to Pesach. Soon to the holiday of Passover. And it's mentioned three times a day in our tefillot, in our prayers. We talk about the exodus from Egypt. Well, you think we'd get over it by now. It's just a story. What about the other stuff? Egypt. Real or imagined, Egypt is the metaphor. Mitzrayim, Tsar. It is the metaphor for the sealing of one's fate, the sealing of one's hearts, the sealing and the impossibility of growth, change, optimism, happily ever afters. Egypt cannot be defied. And yet we are a people who broke the bonds of physical, emotional, and spiritual slavery to act as God's right hand in bettering the world, in bettering life for every human being who walks God's beautiful, precious, blessed earth. Let's see, who's with us today? Wow, wow, wow. A beautiful Chevra, a beautiful Kahila, a beautiful grouping of friends from around the world. I don't know if you can feel it where you are in your little corner, but with us tonight, late at night, Wednesday night in America, we have America listening in the United States. Boker Tov, Blessed Eretz Yisrael. Canada is with us today, Australia, Germany. Japan has joined us this morning. It's late in the day in Japan, right? The UK is with us, Austria this morning. Then we have kind of like this broad Europe. Good morning, Europe. And the Bahamas. Very nice. It's an honor. And as people join, we'll shout them out. So let this sink in. You know, we used to say, put this in your pipe and smoke it. Or I think the old Laughing Show said, bet your bippy. Just let this sink in. 6 months and change into the war. The war that was imposed upon us. The war upon which we were besieged, caught unawares. Who could ever imagine that ugly? We who survived the Inquisitions. We who survived the Nazi Shoah. We, in our wildest imaginations, we could not imagine what kind of viciousness would rain down upon us on the 7th of October, Simchat Torah 2023. So let this part sink in. If you think Jews are treated differently by the rest of the world, the Red Cross has still not visited one hostage, even one time. So don't tell me that there ain't no double standards when it comes to Jews. Received this poem across my feed. I have to tell you, a lot of the things I'm sharing today were written by others, shared by others, given by others. I felt as though I was a clearing heart, a clearing house for the heart. That was the Freudian slip. It wasn't a spoonerism. I feel as though sometimes I'm a clearing house for the Jewish belly, because I've been so blessed to have this opportunity live every Thursday morning and on podcast the rest of the week to share what is shared with me. And this was actually written by someone who calls herself the Jewish Ginger. If anybody knows the Jewish Ginger, let me know, okay? She calls this piece October 6th. Who were you on October 6th? What got you out of bed? Kept you up, kept you awake at night? What did you dream of before the nightmares began? The numbers you memorized before 10-7 had any meaning? What made you safe before the fear? What made you smile before the pain? What did you long for before the grief? Before you lost your appetite and didn't notice? Before the world shattered into pieces, the world you thought you knew. What consumed your thoughts back when you had a say? Does any of it matter now? Even a little bit? Back when humanity was something you recognized, when you thought you knew your enemies and they looked nothing like your friends? Do you miss the way it was? Do you miss who you used to be? Can you recognize yourself at all? 6 months have gone by, but a lifetime has passed. And along with the thousands of names I've grieved since, I must finally lay to rest the person I was on October 6th. That comes to us by the Jewish ginger. Was thrown a bunch of videos this week. Oh, I forgot to mention, let me throw this out. Anything that we talk about on this show, I take great pride in that everything I share with you is documented, copyrighted, comes from accurate sources. And if there's anything that you wish to have in your own mailbox, you wish me to send you any links to any of the poems, videos, stories that I share, bisimcha, happily, my laptop is your laptop. Okay, so you write to me, Andrea@IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Happy to send you any of the links of the things that I share, and also happy to receive your notes and hear your thoughts and stories of your lives. And let's spread the friendship circle. All right. Oh, let's see. Wow. Mexico and Singapore have joined us this morning. Boker tov, chaverim. Nice to have you with us. There was just this past week, I believe, in London, there was a symposium. I don't have the details. And it was hosted by Dr. Micha Goodman and Efrat Rosenberg, two renowned Israeli thinkers and very important personalities and educators on the Israeli scene. And they spoke to these audiences about the current realities in the Middle East. Pretty brave to go to England to talk about it. And one of the things that, and I'm doing this, it's, how do you say it? From the top of my head, I kind of jotted, I didn't do it verbatim. But what surprised me were the passionate words of Dr. Goodman. And to paraphrase, he said, in Israel, we were surprised twice on October 7th. The first surprise was the cruelty of our vicious, disgusting enemy. But at the same time, we were shocked and surprised by the bravery and the heroism of this Israeli generation. Self-sacrifice and not altruism. There is no theory, according to Dr. Goodman, there is, quote, there is no theory that can explain this generation of Israelis aged 20 to 40. This is the greatest generation in the history of Israel. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Goodman, for not just getting it, but sharing it so articulately. I'm the mother of this generation. My friends are mommies and daddies, and we've seen our children go off in their khakis. And I must tell you, take a moment, friends from overseas, and imagine sending your child who you've raised and loved and dreamed for and made plans for, going off to God knows where to protect us. And there's nothing you can do to protect your baby other than mighty, mighty tefillot, mighty, mighty prayers, number one. And number two, having a grasp of the facts and never waver. Never throw up your arms and say, it's useless. They don't get it. The opposition is too great. If that were the case, we could put down our pens. We could put down our microphones. We can shut our doors and we could cease this holy partnership with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He. Because every effort on behalf of Israel and the Jews around the world is in tandem with our relationship to God. There is no hopelessness. You rise up. You draw on your canvas. You moda'ani it. And you save your baby, you kiss your babies goodbye. And you pray that all of your lives are lives that are rife with meaning. Something else, and this I share to my Jewish friends, both in Eretz Israel and around the world. We've frequently spoken as we get close to Pesach, close to Passover. It's incumbent upon us to remember 20%. A mere 20% of the Israelites living under the iron yoke of Paro's filthy Egypt left. 80% remained. 80% said, not for me. 80% said, I'm scared. Both sides of our mouths. I'm scared. I'm scared to move to Israel. I'm scared of the security situation. I'm scared I won't make a living. I'm scared this will happen to my children. I'm scared that will happen to my children. I'm scared I won't have friends. I'm scared I'll have too many friends. I'm scared I won't find my community. I'm scared. And ani ma'amin. Be'emuna shalema, I understand with full, I believe with full faith. These cannot coexist. There's nothing to fear. Not if you accept that we are in a partnership. So all of us who are members of the tribe, who have made it this far, and still dare to dream and to plan and to plot for the futures of our babies and grandbabies, I read to you the following, and you can put on your hero's cape right now. For your ancestors who withstood pogroms, forced conversion, and inquisitions, for your ancestors who fought back in Warsaw, who lit the Hanukkah in the darkest moments and said the Shema when it seemed hopeless. For the ancestors who willed the dream and the ones who reunited Jerusalem, go, be proud of who you are and what you represent. And make sure you are honoring the sacrifices made time and again so you can say proudly today, yes, I'm Jewish and I have a home in Israel. If you are a Jew who is alive today, do not sit like a shrinking violet. You are royalty. This is not the time to hide. It is the time to jump up, throw your shoulders back. They can't hurt you, but you can hurt yourselves. Okay, now we're not going to read that poem. It's a little long there. Okay, here. So now here we go. Interesting. The Wall Street Journal. I don't really know much about the Wall Street Journal. Let me have a sip here. Forgive me. Forgive me. Just pardon me a moment while I have a sip. Very nice. Okay. The Wall Street Journal brazenly denounced former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats in Tuesday's, what was it, just only 2 days ago, in an editorial on Tuesday, because what did they do? Surprise, surprise, they signed a letter urging, they didn't have to urge President Biden, but they urged President Biden to stop the transfer of weapons to Israel. And the newspaper's editorial response was simply denying weapons to an ally in the middle of a war is the definition of betrayal. And man, I found that interesting. But what I found more interesting, and I think that it behooves us to not know so much, but listen more. I would have thought that from the rumors and what I thought is that every single American Democrat is out to get Israel, or more tellingly, is feckless in its fear of the pro-Palestinian protesters on onomatopoeia. And they will kowtow, but apparently that this letter apparently there are Democrats who are the letter, this actually does confirm what I thought. The letter telling him not to give weapons to Israel was signed by 40 House Democrats after Israel mistakenly killed 7 World Central Kitchen aid workers last week. And it called on Biden to withhold a recently authorized arms package to Israel until a full investigation into the airstrike is completed. I want to say something here. First of all, I apologize. I thought there were 40 Democrats on our team. Apparently not. My original thoughts on American Democrats seems to be accurate, unless somebody can show me otherwise. War is ugly. Mistakes happen in war. Israel, with hands tied behind our backs, is, and I say it today, I will shout it to the rooftops, and I say it forever, the most moral army to ever walk the face of the earth. And do not give parity, that's ITY, to claims that Israeli soldiers are committing abuses on enemy women. It doesn't happen. I've said it before. We were not long ago, several years ago, the Israeli army was accused of racism because they did not rape the Palestinian women. So again, what shall I say? So that's very interesting from the Wall Street Journal. She is a fair, she's a nothing. Okay. So, all right, we did that. And then we have Torres. We like him, Richard Torres. Nice guy, good guy. Here is something very, so I get a lot of videos, and it's hard to share videos on a podcast, but I can tell you the things that make me cry, the things that tug at my heart, the things that I must share with friends. And so many of us have seen the videos of a child gaining hearing at that first time. You've seen that, a little child who was born deaf and suddenly hears his or her mother's voice, and nobody watching those videos can help but be completely choked up and grateful for that which we take for granted. I had this experience this week when I saw a video. I don't know what hospital it was. I believe it was one of the Tel Aviv hospitals. And an Israeli soldier whose last name is deliberately withheld from the media. He lost his eyesight in Gaza. So many have. We think about the injuries. I mean, I know of too many injuries that are internal. Soldiers who will never be the same. They look the same. They still own their body parts. There is no physical scarring. But they are forever changed. And yet here was this guy, Dor, who lost his eyesight in Gaza. And the video shows him. He had, I think, how many operations? Six surgeries he withstood to gain his vision back. And his parents are in the room, and he's with an Israeli doctor who's checking the eyes and checking. And they say to him, "Can you see anything?" And he says, in the presence of his parents, "I can see. I see every letter on the screen." And they turn the apparatus. And he says, "I see my mother. I see my father." My friends, when we open our eyes in the morning and we see and yet envision nothing, it was so powerful. Delighted to share this little mini video with you of this Israeli soldier, this hero, this minor god among man, regaining his vision and saying, "I see my mommy. I see my daddy." Another hero of Israel that you won't get to see. You don't get to see these heroes. A fellow, Alon Masika. He's a jeweler. He's a jewelry manufacturer. I can just imagine. I don't know where his shop was, but I'm someone who's very familiar with 47th Street in Manhattan. And a lot of jewelry businesses and a lot of Israelis there. A lot of Israelis walking around with terrible guilt, knowing that they were Yordim. They had left Israel, but they kept saying they're going to come back one day. They're going to come back one day. I know that I and my family did indeed come back with my former husband, an Israeli, because it was really the right thing to do. And here you have this guy, Alon Masika, who's a jeweler, who came back to Israel several years ago. His son, Adir, he has other children. Adir was at the Nova Festival and called his father on that Shabbat, Simchat Torah morning, and said, "They've killed my two friends, and Daddy, I don't think I'm coming home. I love you." And that could have been the end of the story. And he didn't come home. They did get his body. They did bury his precious son, Adir, whose name means precious. And Alon Masika, who apparently is a traditional guy, but he's definitely not Torah observant. Certainly not completely. He saw the videos that you and I saw, and saw all of these marriages and these proposals, and boys and girls recognizing the frailty, the fragility of life. And instead of waiting a little longer and seeing, and maybe after, we'll think, is she's really a girl for me? Engagements abounding. And he put up a post. Alon Masika, the jewelry manufacturer from America who relocated to Israel and still works in jewelry. And he said, "The first soldier who contacts me and gets engaged, I will give him a ring with which to propose so that he can build a home in Israel, the home that my son Adir will never be able to build." And so it was almost moments later, he got a call. And he gave them a half a carat, beautiful diamond ring with which to propose. And then there was another, and then there was another, and then there was another. To date, building on pain, we do what we do because mi kamocha, Who is like you, children of Israel? Alon Masika, in the name of his son, Adir, has given away today, given away 81 diamond engagement rings to soldiers who are marrying on the army bases here in precious Eretz Israel. And he was asked, how many more will you do? And his answer was, my son will not build a home in Israel, but I am part of homes and families that are being built, and I will go on as long as I can. Heroes in Israel. Another story. Another Adir. Crazy. I didn't know it was such a popular name right then. Adir Tahar. Killed. And if this is too much for your stomach, I'm sorry. He was killed and the family got his body back, except there was one piece missing. His head. Can you imagine being a father who's able to talk about it with clarity and a strong voice and to express a love of Israel? And the head of his beloved son, Adir Tahar, according to his father, David, was being kept in an ice cream freezer in Gaza. Parody. We and our enemies are just alike. Not so much. And our precious, brave, crazy, part of the best generation that ever existed in Israel, for the sake of Zion, retrieved the head of Adir Tahar and returned it to his father. So if anybody listening to this program is sitting back and judging any of us, you take a breather. Most of us cannot come close. All right, South Africa. Good morning, South Africa. See you again soon. Let me also, okay, I just want to say also one other thing. Anybody wants me to share? Saw a beautiful video, teeny, teeny video, of the final moments of a conversion ceremony of an Israeli cadet, an Air Force cadet, a beautiful girl, such a beautiful girl. The final moments as the rabbis bestow upon her the crown of Judaism, and she covers her eyes and she says, Shema Yisrael. And anybody watching this video that has a dry eye, I don't know who you are. Listen to a different program. So it was really very, very beautiful and a great way to start Shabbos Kodesh. Okay. Oh, all right. PSA, public service announcement. Okay. What do they also say? PDA, public displays of affection. No. Public service announcement, PSA. I will be, please God, for the Passover holiday, I will be in the Washington, Baltimore, Silver Spring area. And I will be speaking on the second day of Yontif, please God, at, I can't remember the name of the shul, but it's a lovely synagogue in the neighborhood of White Oak. Okay, it's Rabbi Bunim's shul, and God willing, I will be speaking in the shul that afternoon. But if you are in the Rockville area or Silver Spring and you'd like me to come and share a few words with your kahila, preferably not on Shabbos and not on the holiday, I would be very happy to speak with you and make arrangements, and we can meet and share some thoughts. Andrea at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Okay, where's my... all of my Torah books. We've got so much Torah going on today. All right. Today is the Torah portion of, looking at the clock here. Wow. Tazria. All right. Very often it's Tazria of Mesoret, but not this year. It's Tazria. So in this week's reading, It's almost like a side thought, almost, or sort of informed on the side, that there's a commandment regarding circumcision, the brit milah, of male children at the age of 8 days. Now, this commandment has existed forever in Jewish life. Okay? We know, we remember, it's a symbol of the covenant with our father Abraham, and it was between the Lord of Israel and the people of Israel, and it is a core ritual of Judaism. It's not everything but brit milah. So this bris, it's a covenant, and you may hear the word brit in other things. It defines our dedication to our faith and tradition, and it has remained despite various attempts to destroy it in every single century. Throughout history, as a matter of fact, this circumcision has been under attack and criticism from the outside world. The source material that I got to share these thoughts with you did not mention the new woke term. I've actually heard it. It's called body integrity. And I'm sure many of you have heard of this. We don't do that. It's not what we do. I want my child intact. If he decides, I was going to say if he or she today, who knows, but if he decides that he wants to be circumcised when he's 16, 17, 18, that's his choice. But we will not be part and parcel of that mutilation. So it reminds me of the Romans and the Greeks. They worshipped the human body in its physical form and for its prowess. Anybody who's ever been to a museum and you see these magnificent torsos carved in stone with such detail, the bend of the muscles, you even see the sinews underneath the skin. And they viewed circumcision, they abhorred it. They saw it as defiling the body and its perfection. But we, on the other hand, felt that circumcision sanctified the body and represented the better nature of human beings, the spiritual and eternal side of human life. It's very interesting because I'm off script again, but, you know, I often use the term that we were created. It's not my term. We were created, B'Tselem Elohim, in God's image, in God's image of ourselves. And it's a partnership. That's one of the major differences between Judaism and other faiths. God says, you know, but here we have we're an argumentative people. We're a people that interact, and we interact with God. And because we are created in, quote, his image, it doesn't mean that I have blue eyes, God has blue eyes. God forbid, God forbid. In as much as we can be, God sees us in our perfection, and he sees our relationship with him as gasp, a partnership. And when a male child is born, remaining on his body at birth is this we imperfection called a foreskin. It's there deliberately. It is there so that on the eighth day, we, in partnership with God, complete the work. It's not, he said we do. We say, he hands us the reins and says, define our union. Jews, according to Rabbi Beryl Wine, Jews always believe that inevitably the body weakens, it withers, and eventually we disappear. And the only intangible parts of our existence, our memory, our spirit, our creativity, those parts that endure are passed on from generation to generation. So in this way, circumcision was not so much a defilement of the human body, it's a testament to the enhancement and the eternity of the human spirit. Every circumcision is a statement of renewal of that original covenant with our father, Abraham. It's a declaration. It's a testimony to the values of monotheism, the belief in one God, of human kindness, and indeed hospitality that he represented and introduced into a pagan, violent, hostile world environment. Even today, we know. We know what's under siege. Bris Milah. Kashrut, the killing of animals according to kosher law. All of our dietary requirements. For us, it's a basic commandment. But what do these groups do? They cloak themselves in piety and self-righteousness. They claim to represent, they represent the eight-day-old infant who has no say in the matter. And of course, mixed into this self-created argument is that old Roman and Greek idea of the holiness of the human body and the necessity to protect it from mutilation, which still exists. The same people who are piercing abject body parts, inking their bodies, telling stories like a roadmap of bird crap, and aborting life that's developing within unsuspecting wombs. There are so-called democratic countries that have actually legislated against circumstances. I'm not sure who some of them are, but I believe it's some of the Scandinavian countries. Correct me if I'm wrong. All in the name of some higher good and greater morality. Only they possess it. Only they understand. By the way, it should be noted that in the Islamic faith, who also claims heritage with our father Abraham, circumcision is also an enshrined ritual and one of the tenets of Islam. But it's usually performed only when the child is much older. So one of the decrees against Judaism, you know, instituted by the tyrannical Soviet Union government in the last century was the banning of circumcision. But when it collapsed, an enormous number of Jews who were already adults chose to undergo Brit Milah, to show their solidarity with their people and with the tradition of our fathers. I have a friend who very, very knowledgeable. Her husband is a yeshiva rebbe. And she told me, and I can tell you, she told me that in the yeshiva, I know for a fact, or Sameach, in the Malot Dafna area, they have an on-call mohel, a circumciser, who he's on call for so many Jewish men of all ages who are returning to Judaism, whether born Jewish and yet never had a bris, or newcomers, converts to Judaism, who are taking upon themselves the yoke of Judaism and really cleaving greatly to their faith. And these men, they have bris milah ceremonies for these guys. We're so strong. We're so permanent. And no matter what the status of one's religious observance might be, we shout our loyalty from the rooftops and we celebrate this Brit Milah. It's a commitment that binds the Jewish people together with each other, with our past, with our present, and please God, our eternity. Okay. Rabbi A.Z. Friedman. I don't know what AZ is. In the book, Wellsprings of Torah, I came across this. So he records a commentary from an anonymous source anonymous source of our parsha as follows. A man can immediately see the faults of others, but not his own. And he finds the faults of strangers more readily than those of his own kin. You know, in this same vein, Rabbi Zelig Pliskin, who I very frequently quote, he quotes the Chafetz Chaim saying, one of the main reasons a person speaks against others is because he feels that he is superior to them. If a person is truly aware of his own faults, he will not seek out the faults of others. And then you have Rabbi Twersky of blessed memory. He shares the thoughts in his book. I love my books. Okay. His thoughts in his book, Living Each Week. Rabbi Twersky says, there are many things that we do in the interest of time rather than truly in our best interests. We take risks in traffic to save seconds, which are not really important. We might stress ourselves in running to catch elevators or trains, and we may push ourselves into schedules that demand more of our bodies than they can tolerate. A person might be guilty of selling himself into slavery. While some constraints of time are unavoidable, we often allow ourselves to be unnecessarily dominated by time. The mitzvah, the commandment indeed, of establishing a calendar or regulating our time should be lachem, for your own true interests. It's funny, this reminds me, I often think on Shabbos, my husband will be sitting on the patio, on the mirpeset, we call it, in the sun, even in the winter, it just comes in, just warms the bone. And he'll say to me, what time is it? And I will say, because I'm not nearly as lofty as he is, I'll say, why aren't you wearing a watch? And he just looks at me. And on his face, I see the shine, the glow, the glory of Shabbat. I'm hoping to get there soon where I don't have my watch on. Oh, Ireland has joined us. Very nice. Good morning. All right. So everything I'm sharing now are, of course, thoughts to take into Shabbat. So stay with me because we're getting ready for these Shabbases. We're cleaning out our homes slowly, some of us more slowly than others, of chametz, leavened goods. Some of us, we're talking about today, Lashon Hora, literally translated to a bad tongue or evil talk. But it has a lot of nuances. And when we talk about chametz, leavened goods, we're not just talking about Rice Krispies, English muffins, and remaining pasta. Listen up and grow with me. So because of its destructive nature, Lashon Hara is compared to a sword. Now, I've heard this before, a weapon of destruction. This is according to the Midrash. But there's a counter to this idea, and it's an opinion that it's more like an arrow. The originator of the latter simile, it being like an arrow, gives the following example for this analogy. A person who raises a sword to kill his enemy can always decide to stop the brutal act, even when the sword is already on the enemy's neck. But an arrow, on the other hand, as soon as it's shot and leaves the bow, it's propelled and cannot be retracted until it reaches its target. It's the same thing with Lashon Hara. The moment the words leave the lips of the slanderer or the gossiper, they cannot be interrupted and brought back. They continue at the speed of sound while causing damage and destruction. I remember the reporter and great thinker, Shana Alexander, once said, trying to stop gossip is the same as trying to unring a bell. But here's the kicker. As serious and grave a sin as Lashon Hara is, while involving other human beings, the sin is that much greater when the subject of slander, evil talk, Lashon Hara, is Klal Yisrael, or Eretz Yisrael, the people or the land of Israel. The Mishnah brings this down, and it tells us, quote, we find that the judgment against our ancestors in the wilderness was sealed only because of their evil tongue, unquote. The Gemara further explains that the reference here is Lashon Hara spread by the spies, the Meraglim, through their slanderous report about the promised land. Oh, friends, we have to be doubly careful when discussing Israel. And please fight that urge to be ensnared by that trap of destruction, Lashon Hara, against us. Then, only then, will we merit the bracha, the blessing that is written in Psalms. Quote, you shall see only the good in Yerushalayim, so that you would be worthy to be blessed by God with the special blessing from Zion. Okay. In last week's, let me just look here. We're following the clock, boys and girls. This is very good. Okay. In last week's portion, Parsha Shemini, the Torah spells out the various species of animals and birds that may or not be eaten. It's a very curious Torah portion, very curious. Some of them look so kosher, so close to kosher, my favorite term. You know, we ate that. It was close to kosher. Okay. So immediately following this chapter, the Torah sets forth the laws of Negaim, the plagues, which according to Chazal, the sages, are the penalty for the sin of Lashon Hara, including, among others, of course, slander, talebearing, malicious gossip. Need I go on? People are more scrupulous not to eat forbidden foods, says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, than they are not to devour and destroy someone by spreading Lashon Hara about him. The juxtaposition of these chapters back to back, side by side, teaches us that consuming a human being by means of Lashon Hara is no less sinful than consuming a forbidden animal. Perhaps this is good material for discussion at the Shabbos table. I know that I'm going to certainly address it. And again, in closing, a final note from Rabbi Twersky in his book, Smiling Each Day. You got to get that book. It's really good. A person is judged according to the way he relates to others. If you cannot overlook minor infractions that others have done to you, how can you expect God to forgive major infractions that you have committed in front of him? Yeah. Good fodder for our Shabbos tables. Thank you for joining me this week. Wishing peace, solace, an end to the bloodshed, a release of the hostages, and Shabbat Shalom Umivorach from Jerusalem.